And welcome back to episode 161 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
Well, Carl, we didn't get the Apple event. What's wrong? What's happened?
No, we definitely didn't get any event. It was, we'll discuss that in a bit, but it wasn't great.
I'm sorry. It's all over. We were looking forward to an Apple event. Didn't get it. So I'm done. We're out of here.
Decidedly underwhelmed with the offering.
Yes, indeed it is. So welcome back to episode 161 of the Weekly Tech Rant. And this week we're going to talk about the non-event, literally the non-event from Apple. We're going to talk about Apple's latest colors for spring, and my, will you be blown away with these, because we certainly weren't. We're going to talk about the Epic hack, which probably wasn't a hack now, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but we'll let you know about that. VMware have finally sold off Broadcom have finally sold off the first part of VMware that they no longer wanted, which is the EUC division, which we mentioned the other week. And we're going to talk a little bit more about what that means, who's bought them, and obviously where do they go from here, I guess, and what, you know, what does it, the world look like now for a standalone EUC organization. Then we're going to talk about Apple's and Spotify fine. The EU have now issued a large chunk of change fine for Apple. We're going to talk about what that means for Apple and obviously what it means for Spotify as well, because it's a bit of a weird relationship going on there. And I like to talk about a new bit of tech that I picked up this week, the Bamboo Lab A1 Mini 3D printer. Yes, what a mouthful that was, which has replaced my Ender 3, and my, what a replacement it is. And finally, the Tech Rant Rumor Mill is back, and we'll hold fire on that, what that is, until we get there. So let's kick off then with the non-event of the MacBook upgrades, which is MacBook Airs, I should state, isn't it? Not Pros.
About sums it up. So that was quick. Kind of expecting an event, and we kind of talked, was it last week, about maybe the updated MacBook Airs, iPads, new color for the phone. All sorts of just small bits into a small event. But no, we got a press release, didn't we, for just basically the MacBook Air, which we covered last week. So what it really got was an M3 upgrade to the 13 and the 15-inch. Got Wi-Fi 6E. That was about it. I mean, the M2 is going to stick around. They've discontinued the M1. That's pretty much all it said.
It was, and pretty much now as well, is they're saying that the 13 and 15-inch ones are up to, according to Apple, 60% faster than the M1 MacBook Air. Now, if you think about it, that M1 MacBook Air was a pretty decent all-round machine. I'd say the majority of users, 90% of people who just want to go on the web, just want to do some SaaS applications, that machine probably can still handle everything they want. Realistically, can't it?
Yeah, no doubt. The M1 is still a good machine. If 99% of the people... Perfectly fine.
And I would imagine if those are still in stock at other retailers, they're going to still be there. And you're going to probably see some tasty reductions on those now. Yeah. The M2 machine, like you say, is going to stick around, is a pretty decent machine on its own. You know, I'm running an M2 Mac Mini here, M2 Pro. I've got two M1 MacBooks, one work, one's personal, you know, and they've got 16 gig of RAM. And as we've just said,
Which M1 are they? Are they M1 or M1 Pro?
Pros, both of them pros, right. Yeah. The M2 on the Mac Mini, though, is a noticeable uptick, but yeah, another point there. But I have to say, with the M3, you know, they are just increasing the performance every time. We should see at some point the M4s, obviously, but as I understand it, that is the new, isn't that the new process that TSMC haven't brought online yet, isn't it? Is that the sub-3 nanometer?
The one that Apple are being a beta test for.
Yeah, which they haven't actually brought online. So I think we're still some time out for M4s on that part. Yeah. And, you know, these Airs, I guess why they did a press release was because, like you say, what was there to really announce? You've got all the same USB-C, you've got the same displays. Oh, sorry, I forgot there was a big important piece. The MacBook Air can run two displays with the screen closed.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
The screen closed.
Because in the Windows world, you're like, sorry, what? This is an announcement?
So, yes, the base models of the M3 can run two external displays as long as you've got the lid shut on the laptop and you're using external keyboard and mouse.
Yeah.
Which is good.
We're swiftly on that one.
Well, you got to admit, though, that was an improvement over the M1 Mac, wasn't it?
It was, but my mind still boggles that they ever released it with this massive, massive limitation.
That's a feature. Shush.
I
was looking at these and I was thinking to myself, if I was just going to buy a laptop, that 13-inch Air is a really nice looking machine.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is a thin machine. And I mean, I don't mean that in the daftness of its an air. It is a really, really thin machine, isn't it? I mean, I thought I had a tab open with the depth of it. I think it was, where is it? The M1 was, where was it? I had it here somewhere. I knew in my notes somewhere. This is great TV. What about great podcasting? The height of the M1 was 0.4 millimeter. So yeah, 0.4 centimeters. What's that? 41 millimeters, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's absurd. So, and I think they've shrunk it slightly, haven't they, with the new versions?
No, I've got height of the MacBook Air.
Slightly higher, isn't it? Slightly higher, actually.
1.13 centimeters.
Yeah, look at that. So it's okay, it's gained a little bit of height, but that's why the shape's changed, isn't it? Sorry, from the 2020 version. But that is absurd. I'm pretty confident that's got to be thinner than the Gen 1, isn't it? Air.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, because that was, do you remember when that came out with the manila envelope?
In the envelope.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I do.
And that was, I think that was when that came out. Here it is. Yeah, I knew I found it. It was 1.9 centimeters.
Okay. So considerable chop off that one then, yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember.
That, really?
Yeah. I remember at IBM. I was working at IBM at the time. And one of the guys I worked with, do you remember the 11-inch MacBook? So we had a small 11-inch MacBook. And then obviously the new Airs came, and they were just tiny. They were just so tiny, and I couldn't believe myself. But you know, why would anybody want to use this? But you know, these days it's spot on. In fact, you know, why would you want a MacBook Pro? Realistically, what do you necessarily need a MacBook Pro for? No. For most people, you know.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah, but there you go. So new MacBook Airs have been released then. We've got basically an upgrade on the CPU, which is pretty standard these days. No change in the RAM or storage options. They will remain the same. Wi-Fi 6E, as we said, is a new version. Two displays. Let's not forget that. That's super important. Two displays. that's the other one. I know it's the other one. I don't know. I probably hadn't spotted this before. The entry-level 13-inch ones, they come with only a 30-watt power supply.
Do they really? That sounds sounds quite Apple, really.
But if you upgrade, you get a 35-watt dual port or a 70-watt adapter, depending on obviously what you had. Okay. So the 20, but last year's model had a 67-watt option, and now it's 70. So they're obviously pulling more power or need more power to charge those batteries up a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I think the only thing that bugs me, just as my final point on this, and it's probably, I know it's one we've talked about at length, is the Apple tax on if you want additional storage or RAM.
It's ridiculous.
You know, if you're doing it in dollars, it's $200 extra to go from 8 gig to 16 gig.
Wow.
And I know what their argument here is, was that it's not external RAM. It's not like you're clipping in. It's all part of the SoC, isn't it? It's all one unit that has to be manufactured.
I'll kind of argue then at that point, it's less work to add it to the SoC. Because you're not putting new DIMM slots on the motherboard or anything like that.
But why not just put them at 16 to start with?
Because it's not the same, Apple said, isn't it? 8 gig in the Apple world is the same as 16 gig in the Windows.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that. That's very true, isn't it? Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
I see they left out Linux there, which or Unix as a comparison.
How dare you? How dare you? Do you remember obviously they're coming black again, is it? But the end. Do you remember that supposedly, as I think we talked about in the press release last week, that we're meant to have their anodized black piece has a less fingerprint. What's the right word I'm looking for? It's meant to show less fingerprints. Isn't that the right statement?
Yes.
But I don't know. I've heard some rumors that is still causing the issues.
But it's not really black, is it? It's midnight.
It's not. It's midnight, which is, isn't it?
Which a dark navy blue. Right.
Yeah. Though, I won't lie, I would buy one in that colour.
Yeah, so would I.
So,
but it's not black.
Talking of colours then, Apple have released some new colours for their spring lineup. They do this every year. So a new iPhone case. No, not new iPhone colour, but new iPhone
just case.
just case, and some new watch bands. And what lovely colours have we got there, Carl? Because, you know, I know you're thrilled with this.
Light blue, soft mint, just pink, and sunshine, which is yellow.
And these are the fine woven cases, aren't they?
I was so underwhelmed, but I didn't look further than the names.
Actually, no, sorry, I don't think they are.
The silicon ones.
This is silicon, excuse me, because the fine woven is there's a lot of problems with those fine woven cases, isn't there?
They're not lasting as long as level ones are they? Not by a long shot.
Did you know that Amazon have added a tag on those cases? If you buy them from Amazon, there's a thing at the bottom that says this is a frequently returned item.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the pictures on Twitter. People said I've had them like 3 or 4 months and they're just falling to pieces. Bring back the level ones.
Bring back the cow.
he was a hardy cow.
Yes. So, I mean, this is a bit underwhelming, really, isn't it? So you're basically getting the pastel shades of primary colours almost, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, and then you got the matching watch straps to go with that.
A whole lineup.
I don't know where to go with that, really.
And there's a new Hermes one I saw, didn't it? There was a new. I think
can't
that lineup.
A Hermes one.
What? What do you mean you can't afford a Hermes one?
It's the price of an iPhone, isn't it? Or is it more than the Apple Watch itself?
Listen, pal, I know how well you're doing work. in all fairness, I think the only one out of that lot is the braided sport loop, I think I saw at the bottom there, which was a nice sort of dark blue, which is similar to the Nike one that I wear.
There was one other colour, ocean blue, I think they said. It came on some of the straps.
Yeah, that's quite nice. That's about the only one, like a navyish blue, isn't it? It's nice, that.
Yeah.
But no new iPhone. So last year, didn't we get, was it the purple iPhone last year or the lilac one?
Thought it was lilac, maybe.
I think it was. There was a lilac iPhone 14 or purple, wasn't there? But I don't know.
I've got the Pro Max 14 in deep purple or whatever they call it.
Yeah, but it was the other one, wasn't it?
iPhone, not a Pro. Yeah.
Yeah, that one is in progress at the moment. I think in terms of got to be a release on the next 15 because you'd expect them to have one lined up, the same as the 14, isn't there?
Yeah. Yeah, we got purple, which was more of a very light lilac-y purple.
Yeah, that's the one. I'm just thinking, and I can't remember what we had before. I can't remember what the 13 was, but there was one obviously for the 13 as well.
Was it green?
Yeah. I think it was, wasn't it? Wasn't it like a sea green, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. But there you go then. So some slightly underwhelming colours from Apple in regards to their spring cases and watches. But, you know, I guess if you're in the market for a new watch strap and you like straightforward colours, they are quite nice. I think, you know, the raspberry actually probably looks nice as well. The raspberry on the watch strap looks quite nice. Yeah. I think that's probably quite good. And the ocean blue as well. But there you go then. No new actual colours for the devices, just the cases and the straps then. So let's talk a little bit about the Epic Games hack that wasn't really a hack, but turns out to be more of a scam.
So what is this? So it was initially announced by, Mogilevich?
Mogilevich, what is that?
Hacking scam group. They initially came out and claimed they'd just shy of 190 gigabytes of data from Epic Games. But they've now come forward claiming they did not actually steal any data from Epic Games, but rather pretended to in order to scam other hackers. So they're describing themselves as not as a ransomware hackers, but as professional fraudsters and criminal geniuses.
Fair play. I mean, the first part's probably accurate. The second part, I mean, it seems a little bit of a humble brag, but there you go.
Yeah, so they say their goal was to gain attention using a big company like Epic Games, not for the fame, but to carry out scams on other hackers. They basically tricked other hackers into buying fake ransomware infrastructure tools. It's a bit of an odd one, really. So,
it is because originally they had said that they'd stolen login data, they'd stolen payment information.
Source code.
source code of applications and games that were coming out, wasn't it? And what they're saying now is then what they are trying to scam other.
I think the idea might have been that, you know, come out, show that they're really good. They stole all this data from Epic Games, a big company, surely with lots of security, and to get other, maybe smaller hacking groups to buy into the tools they used, as well as the data they were allegedly selling. But in fact, it was all just a scam to get money out of these other groups.
So basically, we're trying to flog our own software, but the way we're going to do it, let's basically pretend we've hacked Epic, and, you know, and then you'll come and buy our stuff because we're awesome.
Their software wasn't real; it was fake.
and Epic were like, "Look, we wouldn't normally do this, but this is not true."
I mean, it's an interesting business proposition there, but I mean, are you picking a fight with the wrong people here?
Well, I did. You must have read my mind, because I was going to say something very similar on the point of that seems the most ridiculous thing. It's like, why would you want to annoy the people that do this regularly to other companies, individuals? To me, this is maybe I'm wrong, but to me, this is asking for trouble here.
Got big cojones. But yeah, I can't see it being long before someone claims of taking down this company, stealing their own actual data, or something bad happening to them.
I was just going to say, I think this is is this the argument of, well, yeah, that they're all criminals themselves, so what are they going to do if we scam them?
No one are among thieves.
Yeah, I feel actually no, this is probably the most dangerous thing you could be doing, probably.
So, we'll keep an eye out for these guys, because I'm sure we're going to hear from them again.
I know. So, just to be clear then, Epic were never hacked. There was not 190 gig of data. And instead, we've got a bunch of, well, I'm going to use a polite phrase, idiots, who are probably going to be hacked themselves now by their own community. Yeah. Fair play. Yes. Excellent work. Well done there.
Oh dear. On to a story that's a bit closer to our hearts, having worked for VMware EUC. Obviously, we worried about them when, well, we worried a lot about them when Broadcom bought them. But they are going to be spun off to a company called KKR, or that is Kohlberg Kravis Roberts, who are an American investment firm. I've never heard of these guys.
No, nor had I. I had to look them up because I was like, I know a few of the investment firms and private equity, but these were a new one to me. Absolutely,
They are very, very big. Apparently, they kind of either own or own a large chunk of many companies I've actually heard of: Barracuda Networks, BMC, Cloudera, Darktrace, Magic Leap, bizarrely, many more. There was about 700 odd on their website when I looked.
Yeah, massive portfolio, about $176 billion in private equity investments. So, yeah, not small at all.
No. So, they basically said, it's going to allow the EUC division to accelerate its growth. And they're actually going to continue to invest in it, which would be good, because VMware didn't really invest in EUC, did it? It was a bit criminally lacking there. So, it'd be nice for them to actually get some investment, maybe be a bit more competitive again.
I think so. And I think, towards the end of VMware as a standalone organization to Broadcom, EUC, if we talk about EUC, and when we talk about EUC, what we mean is end user computing, as we said, this is the area where you have kind of two splits of this camp, don't you? On one side, you have what would be classed today as virtual desktops. So the old thin client environments that many of us used in the past is now a virtual desktop that's run through a cloud-based offering. So in the case of VMware, you've got their VMware Horizon offering, which is either run through on top of their own software-defined data center stack, so SXI and etc., or is run through things like the Azure
Amazon
environment.
Azure.
And offered that way as well. And typically you're offering Microsoft environments here. That's pretty much what you're offering, is you sign into a virtual desktop on your machine. The other side of it, of course, is what would be classed as the unified endpoint management piece. So that is the management of your mobile phones, your Android, your Apples, your tablets, your you know, your smaller desktop devices, desktops in some respect. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And Windows all managed by it.
Yeah, with the lighter management in a kind of approach through policies and things like that. And where we kind of started off many, many years ago, back when it was AirWatch before the acquisition that VMware did. And obviously I was with Maz 360. And we were competing on opposite sides of the fence before both of us, yes, you know, coming together, and obviously myself joining VMware as well in that time. But, you know, EUC then has become this kind of, as you say, this area of VMware that really didn't have the investment, did it, towards the end. And part of that, I think, was the commoditization. Part of it was actually there was a massive competition from one particular vendor only, which is Microsoft. And that's pretty much where we sit today, isn't it? I think if you look at that environment, there are other vendors in the space, but realistically, there are two players, which is Microsoft. Yeah, I mean,
if you want one that's going to cover your entire stack, top to bottom, all your mobiles and different flavors, your tablets, your desktops, and yeah, it's Microsoft or VMware's EUC.
But so what we know about this deal then is that they've been spun off. What was it? Was it 1.6 billion? I can't remember exactly what it was.
I didn't see a figure actually.
I think there was some bandied around somewhere. I can't remember now. But so they've been spun off to KKR then. But we don't know anything beyond that in terms of what the company's going to be called, do we? So at the moment, it's still referred to as the EUC division, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's going to be run by Shankar Iyer, who's currently the MT team, and
the management general manager. Yeah, apparently.
And he's going to stay there.
3.8 billion.
Oh, 3.8 billion, much more than I thought. So thank you.
Because at 1.2, that was less than they bought AirWatch for. So
yeah,
I was going to say, yeah, wow.
Yeah, you're right. You know, they got it for a deal. So, but okay, so. So two things. I think this is really good news for those that work in that division. I think there clearly is, you know, appetite in the market to have a viable competitor. And that's where I'm going to flip the coin and say that actually, how is this realistically going to work? Because Microsoft are the 10,000 pound gorilla in the room who, if you go back, just under 10 years or so, when they released Intune, we laughed and we're like, what is this? You know,
We came up against it so many times. It was such an easy deal to win if Intune was the competitor.
But those of us that were realistic about the reality of what was going to happen here,
We knew what was coming.
And ultimately, you know, through various changes, you know, mergements with, you know, System Center Configuration Manager, Intune getting rebranded, all this kind of stuff. And now Microsoft themselves have their own offering of, what's the cloud PCs called? I can't think what they call it now. You know, the Windows 365 cloud PC.
Is it that Microsoft 360? I can't remember what they call it.
But they've got their cloud PC offering now as well, haven't they? Their virtual desktops. All this kind of stuff, right? And, of course, wrapped it all in with those E5 licenses. It's become now almost, I don't want to say a single horse race, but it's very difficult now, isn't it? Unless you are able to demonstrate value, or you've got a mixed environment, for customers to get away from that Microsoft kind of, I want to say infection, because it is, isn't it? Because once you're bought into it, it's very difficult to get out of it.
Exactly. If they bought their E5 license, they're getting it for free, basically, aren't they? Allegedly free. You know, it's included in the price. They'll pay any extra on top to get the management. So, yeah, positioning something like, or any other UEM to manage the fleet then is a hard sell. I mean, and while the IT guys, people actually use it day to day, might want to have a tool that's actually user friendly. as soon as it gets up to C level, people that actually make decisions, they go, well, no, it's good enough. Yeah, that's what you'll use.
And that's the point, right? And it also is the other thing I kind of question is not the UEM part. So we'll park that for a second, because I think that as a standalone platform company works perfectly fine. The bit that kind of worries me is the Horizon element, the virtual desktop. So it's pretty much mated, isn't it, to the current VMware software stack. And again, there's no information yet on how that's going to work. But my question is, how are they going to disconnect that? You know, how are they going to? I'm assuming
it does run on others, because you can put it on Azure and AWS, so it must have the capability to run on stuff other than vSphere.
Oh, agreed. But I think when you look at it, kind of historically, most of the Horizon stuff was based on the VMware stack, wasn't it? I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I just kind of, you know, playing devil's advocate here and be like, where does this go? But you know, investment's good. You know, investment's good. Get some R&D in there. Have some real competition in the market. It'd be great to know what they're going to call it. I'd love to. I can't wait, in fact, to see what they're going to call this, because names are everything. Names are, you know, they invoke everything, don't they? And if we, yeah, we talked about AirWatch, you know, it was a, still people still talk about AirWatch today as, you know, as a company rather than Workspace ONE.
Yep.
You know, so it's there. So look, I think this is really good. I don't, I mean, I don't know if, have you spoken to anybody, you know, former colleagues and that who are in the,
business? I mean, it's still, even them internally, it's basically up in the air at the moment. They've just been told business as usual. I mean, the deal hasn't closed yet. It's expected to close later in the year, but yeah, the people I spoke to internally haven't really heard anything.
Yeah. I was going to say similar as well. I mean, a friend of mine who works in the, he's an EUC architect down in Australia, you know, friend of the show. I think he was kind of unsure about where this was going, was kind of biding his time to see whether or not it stayed. You know, he kind of, you know, was it going to stay? Was it going to go? And, you know, rather than leave the company, he wanted to see where it was going. I think in his fair, he's done well. He's, you know, he's going to stay on. Hopefully it's going to give him a new opportunity to, with that team. So, and again, like many other colleagues there, I hope they have the same opportunities to go forward. So, yeah, I think we're going to keep an eye on this. there's definitely going to be announcements coming soon, I suspect, as they rebrand and go forward. And I'd be also interested to know what the business, what the aim of the business is, you know, what is going to be their kind of, you know, their priority. Is it going to be aligned to the Workspace ONE messaging, or are they going to take an opportunity here to kind of really refocus on what they want to be as an organization? I'm sure all of these things will come out, but this is, I think this is probably one of the better stories out of the Broadcom situation, unlike the Carbon Black situation, which has been still, I don't believe anybody's bought them yet, have they?
Not as far as I'm aware.
And the reason I say that, and I realize I've just seen the notes up at the other day. According to Broadcom, at the end of February, they pulled the sale.
Okay.
So Broadcom have said that it is no longer for sale.
Oh, okay.
Instead they did major layoffs. I know, because I see a lot of stuff on LinkedIn, people saying a layoff. I wonder whether or not they're going to blur it with what's it? Semantic, isn't it?
That's... Semantic, yeah. Huh.
So, yeah. So I think, gentlemen, gentlemen, those people, you know, all of those employees at the EUC division, I believe you've dodged a bullet.
Oh, massively, massively. Talking of bullets, giant big bullets coming from the EU.
Expensive bullets.
So we talked about this last week in a lot more depth, and we were kind of, this is the Spotify EU Apple case. And we were expecting to see a fine probably announced of, what, 500 million euros? We were wrong. The EU just fined Apple 1.84 billion euros.
Ka-ching!
Ka-ching, yeah. So the investigation apparently found that Apple prevented music streaming apps such as Spotify from informing users about cheaper subscriptions outside of the App Store, which we all know, and I know Apple have changed that now, but at the time this was going on, that was kind of still the case. Ouch, that's a big fine. I think that's probably the biggest fine I've ever seen from the EU Commission.
This is stunning, to say the least. And this, the reason for this, isn't it, is that Spotify argued that effectively they were penalized by Apple because they were not allowed to inform their users about alternative ways to sign up for the service, was it, and payment offerings. And if they did so, they had to use Apple and they'd pay the 30% commission or whatever it was, I can't remember now, I think it was, wasn't it, before they changed it. And in that, and you know, Apple themselves argue that actually Spotify have built a business and become the leading streaming service in Europe. And I think Apple's statement said that it was a 56% market share that Spotify had, and basically that Apple had helped them get to that point. But they had paid nothing to Apple for that support and using their platform as
services. Spotify actually allowed to buy it during the App Store. They don't
because of this.
Their login box. Yeah.
And they did that because of this, didn't they? Let's be honest. Yeah. And, you know, they pay their $99 developer account, don't they, as we know.
Yep.
But they're not getting anything for it, as in Apple or not. But you, I guess the argument you've got to say here is that, you know, it's a free app in the service. Sorry, a free app in the App Store.
Yeah.
But that app is huge. And that app is probably one of the reasons why people use the device, you could argue, or vice versa. So, you know, do we have a situation here where Apple have got popularity of the iPhone because of apps like Spotify and other providers who provide free apps? Or has Spotify become so big because this application is available on iPhones?
I don't know. I mean, if Spotify said we're no longer going on iOS, we're Android only, and I'm a Spotify subscriber for the family, would I change? Hell no. I wouldn't put myself through the Android and the family through the Android ecosystem just to get Spotify. No, I'd go to a competitor. And I didn't buy the iPhone because of Spotify.
No, but it's available on there, isn't it? The one that you can use.
But it certainly wasn't the deciding factor. And if it hadn't been on there, I'd still have gone iOS. I mean, but that's my personal opinion. That's because I value, you know, the iOS ecosystem more than Spotify.
No, not a problem. Yeah, and that's the way I look at it as well. Is that, you know, if Apple Music wasn't there, I probably would use Spotify.
Yeah,
because, you know, I used to use Apple the iTunes piece in that beforehand, but it wasn't the same as Apple Music streaming. But I wasn't paying for Spotify, though I pay for Apple. Yeah, you can see some clever marketing.
Well, I pay for Spotify. We've got a family account, so I. Keeps going up. It's just short of £20 a month now, I think it is on it.
Yeah, so does Apple, you know that.
Yeah.
But I guess this isn't the way the EU have come down on this, though, is not because of just Spotify. They're arguing is that Apple has illegally restricted developers, isn't it, to inform about cheaper options in their ecosystem. Yeah. But the real irony here is that that's gone now.
yes, it has gone now. That part, you're allowed to do that, and it's not. It's not like running another app store. You need to pay 50p a person or anything like that. You can advertise and get them to go buy it on other platforms. I don't actually know. Do Spotify allow you to subscribe from Android? I suspect not.
I don't know. I can't question.
I'd have to download on another Android device. But I suspect Google was still charging 30% as well. Yeah. But maybe they're allowed to advertise on Google. But I doubt they were paying Google 30% cut every month for someone's subscription.
No, but here's the bit that makes me chuckle, though, right? Is that if you think about this, Spotify are going to be penalized massively soon.
Yeah.
Because of the new DMA changes that Apple have made, so they've got a free app. And that member, so a free app is, remember, after the first 1 million installs?
That's only on a third-party store.
Is it? I thought that was just a free. I thought that was a free apps as well. I thought that was for free apps as well because it was going to.
On a third party store. Any app on a third party store.
Well, then they're still going to pay anything. So Spotify then actually are doing nothing apart from paying their developer.
Yeah, exactly. So Apple didn't introduce new terms for Apple's own store if you wanted to switch to that.
Oh, that was right. Sorry, that was it. That was my mistake.
But if you've got a free app, there's literally no incentive to switch to the news thing because, because after 1 million installs, you're going to get hit with a charge per install.
That's what I was saying, because I remember before we talked about this, and I forgot, you're right, you don't have to accept the new terms.
No. And actually, Apple did have announced and say, if you switch the new terms, you've got a one-time option to switch back.
U-turn. That's my mistake. It makes sense. But so basically then, Spotify are going to carry on doing what they're doing. Apple
are not going to go to a third-party store. No. They're going to stay where they are and pay nothing.
And Apple have been fined nearly $2 billion. And did you know where that money goes?
No, I don't, actually.
Into the EU budget.
Into the EU budget. Oh, so there's an incentive for them to put out large fines then.
Yeah, I saw this
earlier. Someone wants some better coffee and better toilet roll in the restroom.
All the economy of Greece is going down the pan, so we better quickly.
There is that too, yeah.
So, yeah, So obviously this has been issued. Apple will appeal this, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, they weren't going to take it lying down, were they?
No, but if you we've got a link to this in the show notes. If you have a look at them, there is Apple's response there. It's in the story. It is quite angry. It's a very angry man response, isn't it? Did you see the statement? It's very pointed.
I did not see the statement. I don't think I got that far on it.
Yeah, if you have a look at Apple's Apple's response, it reads very much like an angry man. It is titled "The App Store, Spotify, and Europe's Thriving Digital Market," and it basically says that Spotify has come out of this laughing. It's hilarious. It's really, and basically Apple goes on to slam Spotify, and even one of the things says Spotify pays Apple nothing, and it goes and they pull out the stats, because you know this is the other cool thing, right? I got to just call this out, because this is
we talked about those last week, didn't we? The old stats about how many people have reviewed their apps or how many versions of their apps and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
So you'll love this. So basically, it says that despite all the success, blah blah blah, Spotify pays Apple nothing. That's because Spotify, like many developers, made a choice. Instead of selling subscriptions, they sell them on their website, and Apple doesn't collect a commission. And then it goes on to say, Spotify's been downloaded, re-downloaded, or updated more than 119 billion times on Apple devices, and it's in over 160 countries. And it says there are many more ways that Apple creates value for Spotify at no cost to Spotify. And it... it goes on about like all of the apps work on all the devices. It works on all of the things. They've used Test Flight for 500 versions. The app review team at Apple has reviewed 421 versions for nothing. It's kind of like a really angry statement. And you know, to Apple's point, I see where you're coming from. You know, but
yeah, it's a tricky one. Because for genuine companies like Spotify, you know, smaller companies who are releasing a free app, or even individuals doing it, you don't want to penalize them, okay? But then you'll have the larger companies taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and that's what's happening here, isn't it? You know.
Yeah.
But bit of a big chunk of change, right? Let's move on to a couple of new toy types. So this week I have picked up a new 3D printer. So I retired my Ender 3 Pro after three or so years of heavy usage. It was a great starting device. I enjoyed massively using it, but I wasn't overly impressed with the manual adjustment, the bed leveling, all that kind of stuff that really just caused me absolute pain and frustration.
I think you were very fed up with it by the end.
I was. Anyway, I saw a great deal first off, I've sold the Ender 3 on eBay. That's done. Thank you very much. Got a good return on my money there. And I was looking in the market for a new device. I didn't want something big. I was looking, you know, we talked about the anchors that you've got, which are great devices, but you've had some issues, not with printing, but just with the overall experience, haven't you, of Anchor?
Yeah.
And I was looking at you, suggestion you look at Bamboo Labs. And I had a look at Bamboo Lab, and they do a mini printer, which is the Bamboo Lab A1 Mini, which is a standard small mini single spool, or it can take what they call an AMS, which is an automatic material system, aka multi-color printing. Yeah. But it's a small little machine. It only has 180 mil base plate, which is perfect for the kind of stuff that I'm printing. Automatic bed leveling, auto calibration, pretty much print and go. And you can print a Benchy, which is for those that are, what's a Benchy? Which is the little boat, which is for like a calibration test print, in 14 minutes. And it's brilliant. I got a great deal on it. I got some money off it as well through a voucher. I used the money that I'd sold the Ender 4, and I got a really, really good deal on it. And it turned up on Saturday, and I was printing within 20 minutes of it coming out of the box. And I have probably printed more in the last 2 days than I've done in the last, I don't know, year probably. Yeah. It is phenomenal. Really phenomenal, great little machine. The print quality is absolutely stunning on it. And the software that comes with it is the Bamboo Labs Studio. I've got the app there. I've moved away from using Cura Ultra Slicer, which is good, but, you know, probably a little overkill. And I was using Octoprint for management at the Ender. Because the Bamboo's got it all built in, I don't have to worry about that. Use their own apps. It's got a camera like your Anchor. And it just works. And ultimately, that's what I wanted. I just want a printer that works. And the fact that it does, you know, support the AMS. So if I want to in the future and I want to spend some more money, I could buy the, you know, the material system, and which can take four spools of different filaments, so you can do multicolor printing, which is great. At this point in time, I don't have that need to do that, but the fact that I've got that option is going to be really good.
Option I don't have.
No, which is one of the reasons why you've sort of been struggling, isn't it, with the Anchor?
Yeah, so because... I originally backed the Anchormate M5 on Kickstarter when Anchor first announced it. I got in early. I got a cracking deal on it. I ordered that. I ordered the 6-spool pack, different filaments, and I pre-ordered the their what they call a V6 color engine, which was a separate case inside of it. Puts it was 6 spools in it. It was heated. It did the automatic feeding of all the colors, or was planning to. But after delay and delay and delay, they've now cancelled that. So I now have, I don't need a great printer. Again, just like the Bamboo, I fire and forget. I don't have to do any calibration. It does it automatically. It does really good prints. It does them quick. No complaints there. But I can no longer do multicolor because that option is being canned. I mean, Anchor were great. They gave me my money back, plus more, for the inconvenience. They gave me more than what I paid for it back.
I didn't realize that.
The same for I think I paid, I want to say $300 at the time on Kickstarter to fund the V6. They gave me $330 back. And the same for the spools. I think I paid, $30 or $40 for 6 different color filaments, big 1.5 kg ones. They gave me 150 odd back. So I got more back than what I paid. No complaints. It was very quick to get money back. Just a little disappointed that I don't have that option now. So I am now considering buying a Bamboo Labs.
I've not had it long, obviously, but I would say first impressions are phenomenal. And I would highly recommend one of these.
I will probably get one of the larger ones.
You're doing a bit more. For what I do,
I get more money for the Anchor M5 when I sell it.
So. I was just going to say, you're in a position where you've got a better return than my Ender does. And if you get a Bamboo, then I'll just send you my larger prints that I need.
I mean, I printed your stuff already anyway.
Yeah, but now I can do it myself. So.
You can do it yourself for the smaller stuff. So I mean, but I can't complain. I took the money back from the V6 color and filament and put it towards buying a Steam Deck, and I'm very happy with the Steam Deck.
Awesome. No, that's good to know. But yeah, so that's a new toy this week then. So before we head off today, I think it's time for...
Yeah.
And then the rumour for the new iPhone SE4 then, apparently a redesign coming.
It is. If the CAD renders released, don't even go by, it's getting bigger, quite a bit bigger than the current SE3. So
it's growing.
I know. So I mean, if you're one of those people who like the SE because it's a smaller phone and Apple don't sell the Mini anymore, you're out of luck. So it looks like they're jumping it from a 4.7-inch screen on the current SE3 to a 6.1-inch screen. So for all intents and purposes, it looks very much like the iPhone 13, 14. It's a bigger, 6.1-inch screen on that. No home button anymore. So Touch ID is no longer. You'll be getting Face ID with a notch. Not an island, a notch. I think that's, on the that, back...
That's like iPhone 10, isn't it, the notch? We were saying this earlier, wasn't it?
Yeah, it came out with the 10, X, didn't it? They got Face ID. Yeah, the 10, it was a lot larger notch. This doesn't look as large as the 10. It looks more like a notch on the 11 or 12 where they shrunk it down.
Right, okay.
But look at the back. You've got, it's a single camera with flash. So yeah, keeping in line what you do in the SE, it's a bit cut down on the hardware. Rumour saying the SoC will be bumped from the A13 up to an A15.
Makes sense. Yeah,
there were rumors not saying whether it'll probably be USB-C, but I'm pretty much guaranteed it'll be USB-C. I'll eat my hat if it's not, because of the whole EU thing. So
I was just gonna say, can you imagine Apple did that? We're like, no, cares.
No, so it will be USB-C. There's no way they are releasing that with Lightning.
No way.
$2 billion fine. but no release date. The rumors are saying 2025. I don't know. The last one was in 2022 when I looked it up. So really, we're going to wait another year and a half to get a new SE? Maybe they'll bring it out this year's event, or maybe it's just not ready for that yet. I don't know. We'll see on that one.
Yeah, I mean, they sell well. They're good devices. They do sell well. I think, for those either, you know, younger or old generation don't need the latest device, but they still need a, you know,
devices,
device that works.
They're cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
That can be managed well using something like Workspace ONE EUC.
Oh, funny that. Yeah, look, great device. I think, you know, I've seen a few of them. If I was in the market for just a straightforward phone, or like I say, businesses, yeah, great, great device. But it's odd with the
iPhone 5 seems a long way away to be.
It does.
And for us to get in the rumors now.
Yeah, because these CAD renderings are coming from somewhere, clearly.
Yeah, someone's been given these, whether it's the factory that's making it or whether they were given to the phone manufacturers, case manufacturers, I should say, build cases around it, which is quite often where we see these leaks from.
That's true.
If those are coming out now, then I would say this year, not next year. But I don't know. What do I know?
What do we know? What do we know? And on that statement, that's probably a good place for us to wrap up for today. We'll be back next week with episode 161 with all the latest tech news. You can find us, of course, on the X at Weekly Tech Rant. I've started saying X now. What's wrong with me? At Weekly Tech Rant. And, of course, all of our show notes at techrant.online. Of course, wherever you get your podcasts. And please do share it. Let us know about, you know, your friends. And we'll see you next time. With that, I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good day, all.